Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, September the 25th, 2019. It is 4 p.m. New York time. That's 1 p.m. in Los Angeles, 9 p.m. in London, 5 a.m. in Tokyo, and 6 a.m. in Sydney, Australia. Wherever you are in the world, thanks for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And today is not only a happy day, it's Neville Day! Happy
Yay.
Neville Day, everybody.
We are
continuing exploration. Love Neville Day. We're talking about The Law and the Promise, his final and biggest and most important book that he wrote, Neville Goddard, back in the early 1960s. And we're a little over halfway through it, not quite halfway through it, I guess. But we're up to a chapter that I mentioned last week, Cindy, I was looking forward to because of the title. And this week, it's even more appropriate because of stuff I've gone through personally in the last 24 hours, because the title is called Moods. And moods definitely describe what's been going on. So, you know, the universe, as usual, knows what to deliver, when to deliver it.
Always perfect timing. So that's good. Well, I think it's interesting that Neville is talking about moods, because I sometimes feel in law of attraction circles that there's a lot of judgment around moods, right? Specific moods. But they are part of life on earth. So I'm excited to see what Neville has to say. It's funny. Sometimes we'll come upon a chapter and I'll get really excited because I remember that chapter. I remember the story.
Oh, right.
But I don't remember this one just by the title, so I'm excited to it.
So yeah. It's almost like you're reading it for the first time, even though I'm sure you've read it before. But
you know what? I've read everything that Neville has written, and every time I read it, it's like I'm reading it for the first time.
I'll tell you, I mean, we're on our sixth book, I think, that we've actually read together, and it's always the same stuff over and over again, and every single time it's different. And I'm still kind of wrapping my head around how can it be different when it's the same thing every time? And yet it is.
Because we're different.
I guess that's what it is.
That's all I can figure. I mean, I've done this with other books before as well, and I have several books that I've read over and over, and it's interesting to me because every time I read them, it's something different. And I know in courses that I've taught and sold as like a digital course, I've told my students, because I've had students come back and take a course again. And I said, well, you know, it'll be different for you this time because you're different. And the things that seemed to hit you the first time around, you know, they might not hit you the same way, but something else that you don't even remember reading will like slap you in the face and be like, oh my goodness. Like, are you kidding me? I don't even remember that. It's so powerful. So I always say, just read it again, read the book and read the book again, study the manual and study the manual again. So we have
study the manual, right? That's what it is.
Announcements before we hop in.
Actually, this is about the earliest we've done promos in quite some time. 3 minutes into the program, that's pretty quick for us. let's do them. First and foremost, feel free to join us when we're live streaming as we record these episodes, because every time we record, we live stream them to YouTube. And you can find us on YouTube just by doing a search in YouTube for LOA Today podcast videos. And of course, once you see us popping up to the top there, just click on the subscribe button and click the little bell next to it to always get notified whenever we're publishing or whenever we're live streaming something. And that way you can, if you can be here when we're actually doing the recordings, that's the best part, because we do that 4 p.m. New York time, Monday through Friday. But even if you can't be, you can at least listen to the replay and see us while we're doing it. Go ahead and subscribe on YouTube. But mainly, make sure you also subscribe to the podcast, which, of course, is video-less. But it's also where about 98% of our customers or prospects, not prospects, what are they? They're listeners. That's what they are. Where 98% of our listeners are. They're listening to the podcast. And it's very simple to do that. You'll find us on almost all the podcast platforms. Whatever software you like to use, do a search within it and you will find LOA Today. But if for whatever reason you can't find it, just go to the homepage of our website, loatoday.net, and you will see right at the top of the page how to subscribe using your particular device. So we've made it as easy as we can possibly make it. And fortunately, about 80, 5% of our listeners have taken advantage and become subscribers. But we want the rest of you on the board, too. We want you all subscribing. So please take a moment. It's worth it. And not only do you get really interesting programming every single day, but Wednesdays you get Neville Day. And
how Neville Day. Yay. So, Walt, my video of you is freezing up a little bit occasionally. And I don't know if you're seeing that or not. Or if it's
and vice versa. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't have anything else.
Yeah. Open. It's probably just our computers settling in. I mean, we're using our computers to do this work. So, you know, they have to kind of get into the stream, so to speak.
Right.
But it should settle down.
Okay. Just want to make sure you were aware before we dove into chapter 7. And you're right. There's 15 chapters. So we're, after today, we'll be about halfway through. Chapter 7, called Moods. And Neville starts off with a quote from Sir Winston Churchill that says, "This is an age in which the mood decides the fortunes of people rather than the fortunes decide the mood." I'm curious, you know, if Winston Churchill said this, it was decades ago. What do you make of that quote, and how do you think that applies to us today?
Well, I think I think it's very likely. I don't know exactly when he said it, but it's very likely that he said it around or during the time when he was Prime Minister of Great Britain. And that's one of two periods. I'm going to guess it was during the wartime. And the reason I say that is the mood of the people played a very strong role in what happened during wartime.
Right.
Early on in the war, the mood was pretty grim. Especially during the Blitz. But when they survived the Blitz, the mood picked up substantially. And part of that was because of the way that their leaders were talking to them. I mean, we just recently, within the last few years, saw a film depicting King George VI called The King's Speech, explaining what he went through as king trying to communicate to his people with a speech impediment.
Right.
And it looks, from where I sit at this point, you know, it's 50, 60, 70, 80 years later, that because of the effort he made, he actually inspired people. He inspired his people to, you know, take the steps needed to defend their country and to start believing. And then, of course, Sir Winston came in and he was almost bombastic in his determination that we will fight them from the land, we will fight them on the seas. I mean, he had this really, really strong belief that we were going to win if we're the British. We will never surrender. And that mood really played a major role in terms of kind of bucking up the mood of the people. So the mood of the people really did drive what happened in Great Britain. And I think that's probably true around the world, too, during World War II.
Yeah.
Certainly in Europe, where Hitler had basically conquered most of the continent. But even there, the Résistance in France had been a pretty strong and important player, despite the fact that France was conquered. Here in the United States, it took us a long time to get into the war, I would say rightfully so. But when we did get in, you know, we went in, you know, all the way, 100%. And again, mood played a major role in that too. So I think he was right. I think that the fortunes of the people, I don't think he was talking about financial fortune. I think he was talking about the survival of countries, you know, the ability of peoples to survive what was going on in terms of this worldwide conflict. Now, what does it mean today? I think from a law of attraction perspective, I think it actually beautifully describes the difference between being a default creator and a conscious creator.
Yeah.
Because a default creator believes that whatever my fortunes are, that's how I'm going to respond mood-wise. Whereas the conscious creator says, oh, no, my emotional output, my feeling directly inputs my fortunes. So I think that kind of does the contrast right there in terms of the way we think about these words today.
Yeah, I thought it was such an interesting quote to pull, but at the same time, it's exactly what Neville's teaching. So it does make sense. Right. When I read it, I thought, well, we're talking about a different situation, but is there a different situation? I mean, it's all energetically, it's always the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
We create how we create, whether we're doing it consciously or whether we're doing it, you know, by default, like you said. So I just thought it was interesting. I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. Thank you for that. Okay.
Yeah. So, what do you think? I'm curious what your reaction is. What did you think of the quote?
Well, You know, another thing that I think about when I read this quote and hear the title of the chapter is that the idea of moods, using the word mood instead of the word feeling or the word emotion, because maybe a mood is actually a combination of a feeling and an emotion. I don't know. You know, we describe some people, sometimes we say they're moody. And it's like, mm-hmm. what does that mean? I always think that it means that they are at effect of their moods. You know, in other words, their moods just come on them and then they just react or respond to whatever is happening that way instead of them deciding how they're going to feel. And I understand as a human being, sometimes we feel a certain way and the feeling just happens and, you know, it's not because we called it to us or because we deliberately chose us, but we just have feelings in the same way that we sometimes have thoughts. And then we have to process them and decide, what are we going to do right. with this belief or this thought or this feeling or this mood? So I just thought it was interesting. It seems like a little bit of an old-fashioned word to me, and I'm sure it is. I don't know how much it gets used anymore, unless you hear someone say, describe someone saying they were in a bad mood.
Yes, that's true. That's where it's usually used.
It's like, oh, they were in a good mood today. Right. Or, oh, they were in a bad mood today. But I like the quote and I like the way Neville's using it. So, yeah. So Neville goes on to say that men regard their moods far too much as effects and not sufficiently as causes. And I definitely would say that's true, right? Because people will say, I'm in a really good mood today because this happened, or I'm really in a bad mood because of what happened. So they're looking at, it's easy to look at a mood as an mm-hmm. effect and not as a cause. Neville says moods are imaginal mm-hmm. activities without which no creation is possible. Now, I think that's interesting. He says, Neville's saying that no creation is possible without moods. We say that we're happy because we've achieved our goal. We do not realize that the process works equally well in the reverse direction, that we shall achieve our goal because we have assumed the happy feeling of the wish fulfilled. Moods are not only the result of the conditions of our life, they are also the causes of those conditions. In The Psychology of Emotions, Professor Ribbett writes, an idea which is only an idea produces nothing and does nothing. It only acts if it is felt, if it is accompanied by an affective state, if it awakens tendencies, that is to say, motor elements. I've never heard this before. Maybe I skipped this chapter because I don't remember it.
I've never heard of Professor Ribbett. I wonder who he is. I mean, I have no idea who that is.
I don't know. So it says, the lady in the following story so successfully felt the feeling of her wish fulfilled, she made her mood the character of the night, frozen in a delightful dream.
Oh, we love stories. So let's hear it.
This must be a story that was sent to Neville. It says, most of us read and love fairy stories, but we all know that stories of improbable riches and good fortune are for the delight of the very young. But are they? I want to tell you of something unbelievably wonderful that happened to me through the power of my imagination, and I am not young in years. We live in an age which believes in neither fable nor magic, and yet everything I could possibly want in my wildest daydreams was given to me by the simple use of what you teach, that imagining creates reality, and that feeling is the secret of imagining. At the time this wonderful thing happened to me, I was out of a job and had no family to fall back on for support. I needed just about everything. To find a decent job, I needed a car to look for it. And though I had a car, it was so worn out, it was ready to fall apart. I was behind in my rent. I had no proper clothes to seek a job. And today it's no fun for a woman of 55 to apply for a job of any kind. My bank account was almost depleted, and there was no friend to whom I could turn. But I had been attending... Go ahead.
I want to interrupt the story for just one moment. The one thing I wanted to point out was the importance of one particular phrase there. I had no proper clothes to seek a job. And today it's easy to forget this, but at the time, most women had one, maybe two dresses. Most men had one, maybe two suits. I mean, there were not extensive closets of clothes like people have today. So to say that she had no proper clothes to seek a job, that was a big deal. That was a really big deal for that.
Right. And also when you were seeking a job then, you were going out, you were going to the places, right?
You weren't sending your resume. No, not at all.
Right. So being able to present yourself properly, it was very important. She says, but I had been attending your lectures for almost a year, and my desperation forced me to put my imagination to the test. Indeed, I had nothing to lose. It was natural. Oops, sorry about that. I completely lost my screen for a second. It was natural for me, I suppose, to begin by imagining myself having everything I needed. But I needed so many things, and in such short order that I found myself exhausted when I finally got through the list. And by that time, I was so nervous, I could not sleep. One lecture night, I heard you tell of an artist who captured the feeling, or word, as you called it, of, isn't it wonderful, in his personal experience. I began to apply this idea to my case. Instead of thinking of and imagining every article I needed, I tried to capture the feeling that something wonderful was happening to me. Not tomorrow, not next week, but right now. I would say over and over to myself as I fell asleep, isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening to me now. And as I fell asleep, I would feel the way I would expect to feel under such circumstances. I repeated that imaginary action and feeling for 2 months, night after night. And one day in early October, I met a casual friend I hadn't seen for months who informed me he was about to leave on a trip to New York. I had lived in New York many years ago. We talked of the city a few moments and then parted. I completely forgot the incident. 1 month later, to the day, this man called at my apartment and simply handed me a certified check in my name for $2,500. After I got over the initial shock of seeing my name on a check for so much money, the story that unfolded seemed to me like a dream. It concerned a friend I had not seen or heard from in more than 25 years. This friend of my past, I now learned, had become extremely wealthy in those 25 years. Our mutual acquaintance, who had brought the check to me, had met him quite by accident during the trip to New York last month. During their conversation, they spoke of me, and for reasons I was not to know, for to this day I have not heard from him personally and have never attempted to contact him, this old friend decided to share a portion of his great wealth with me. For the next 2 years, from the office of his attorney, I received monthly checks so generous in amount, they not only covered every necessary requirement of daily living, but left much over for all the lovely things of life, a car, clothes, a spacious apartment, and best of all, no need to earn my daily bread. This past month, I received a letter and some legal papers to be signed, which provide the continuation of this monthly income for the rest of my natural life.
Wow.
I don't even know what to say.
I think about that. The first thing I would mention is $25,000 a month today is a lot of money.
Well, it was 2,500.
But that is still a lot of money.
You can calculate that. Like what it would
2,500 at that point in time was probably closer to 10,000.
Right.
I mean, this is a princely sum to live on. This was a very comfortable living that her friend was giving her.
For the rest of her life,
yeah. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
And all she was doing was capturing that feeling in what I would call an appreciative stance. That's what I was thinking of when you were reading that. She was describing what it is to be appreciative right now.
Right.
And that's really, really, really powerful. I mean, we've heard that so many times, but wow.
I thought what was so interesting was that she said it was exhausting to try to go through the list of everything she needed. So she just settled on something. I feel so wonderful, you know, right? I'm trying to think of exactly what she was saying. I would say over and over to myself as I fell asleep, isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening to me now.
What a phrase. Because that's not even trying to figure out what it is. That's not even trying to name what it is. It's just there's something wonderful there and it feels great. And here's what the feeling is.
Right? So I think everyone listening to this podcast is going to go to sleep tonight saying something wonderful is happening. Yeah.
And I do affirmations as I'm going to sleep in part because of what Neville has taught us. And that's exactly what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be saying to myself tonight, isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening to me now. Wow.
I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's
a fabulous story. I think it's the best story I think we've heard from Neville. I mean, Neville's given us some pretty good stories. Don't get me wrong. There's been some really good ones. But that one just, whoa, that one just kind of catches you between the eyes because of the simplicity of it.
Well, and there are a lot of really cool components to the story. First of all, she says she had no support, no family to back her up, no one to ask for anything. And that she had pretty much sounds like she's lost everything. She has a car that's broken down. She doesn't have proper clothes. She's late on her rent. She has no income coming in at all. And she begins this affirmation, feeling, you know, assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled.
In a big way.
I feel wonderful. Something marvelous is happening to me now. And she says 2 months later, that's another interesting thing because we've seen that in several stories, 3 weeks to 2 months, right? I mean, a lot of stories have been this
time. That's the range.
To me, that's kind of a short time frame. Very short. It is. Right?
I can live with that one.
Yeah. And so the interesting components, like she runs into someone that she hasn't seen in years.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person goes on a trip and runs into someone that he hasn't seen.
Right.
It's like all of these synchronicities and little miraculous connections that happen that produce this, you know, result for her. I think it's amazing.
It's so unbelievable. If you look at it from a logical perspective, it's so unbelievable that that sequence of events could even be predicted that you say to yourself that, you can't explain it in terms of chance. The chance that's involved with that is absurd. It's just not even possible to calculate that.
Yeah.
So it has to be, like you said, synchronicity. It has to be stuff is connecting together and it's happening in a way that we could never have predicted, but it happened.
Well, you know, Neville quotes William Blake says, if the fool would persist in his folly, he would become wise. Sir Winston calls on us to act on the assumption that we already possess that which we sought, to assume a virtue if we have it not. And he says, is this not the secret of miracles? And there's only, you know, isn't there a quote that's like Einstein or someone that said there's two ways to experience the universe. One is that everything's a miracle and the other is that nothing is a miracle. When you look at this, this particular story, I don't know how else to explain it because it's too much to just call it a coincidence.
And, oh yeah.
Right. And sure, you may be able to use the coincidence because you ran into someone, but this is so many things all connected. I think it has to be a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
So Neville goes,
I think it qualifies as a miracle. Well, not just a single miracle. It's like a series of miracles.
Right.
That all connect together in just the right way. That's what makes it so special, because one really unbelievable, incredible thing happens after another incredible thing happens after another incredible thing happens. I mean, it just wakes you up and says, whoa, pay attention. There's something big going on here.
Yeah, amazing. So Neville goes on to quote the Christian Bible. He says, he's mentioning it, he's referencing it. Thus, the man with palsy was told to rise, take up his bed and walk, to mentally act as if he were healed. And when the actions of his imagination corresponded with the actions which he would physically perform, were he healed, he was healed. So this is another story coming up. This is a story about which some may say it would have happened anyway. But those who read it carefully will find room to wonder. It begins 1 year ago as I left Los Angeles to visit my daughter in San Francisco. Instead of the happy-natured individual she'd always been, I found her in deep distress. Not knowing the cause of her anguish and not wishing to ask, I waited until she told me that she was in great financial trouble and must have $3,000 immediately. I am not a poor woman, but I didn't have much cash I could put on my hands on that quickly, and knowing my daughter, I knew she would not have accepted it anyway. I offered to borrow the money for her, but she refused and instead asked me to help her in my way. She meant using my imagination, for I had often told her of your teaching, and some of my words must have struck home. I immediately agreed on this
Interesting
plan.
How she wanted her mother to do it, though. Interesting how her mother wanted her to do it rather than herself doing it. It's like she trusted her mother to do it, but she didn't trust herself to do it.
Right, right. And, you know, but that's funny. I mean, I see this happen a lot. I have had people call me and ask me to, you know, work my magic, so to speak.
Right.
There, because they've seen me do this before and they, you know, maybe it's what you said. They trust me to do it. So she says, I immediately agreed on this plan, with the provision that she would help me help her. So she's bringing her daughter in to be part of this. We decided on an imaginal
scene. No kidding, yeah.
We could both practice that involved seeing money coming to her from everywhere. We felt money was flooding toward her from every corner until she was in the middle of a sea of money. But we did this always with the feeling of joy for anyone concerned, and we had no thought of means, only happiness for all. The idea seemed to catch fire with her, and I know she was responsible for what happened a few days later. She was certainly transformed back to the happy, confident mood that was natural to her, though there was no evidence of any real money coming in at the time. I left to return home in the East. When I arrived home, I called my mother, a lovely young lady of 91, who immediately asked me to come and see her. I wanted a day's rest, but she couldn't wait. It had to be now. Of course, I went, and after greeting me, she handed me a check for $3,000 made out to my daughter. Before I could speak, she handed me three additional checks totaling $1,500 made in favor of my daughter's children. Her reason? She explained that she had suddenly decided the day before to give what she had in cash to those she loved while she was still here to know of their happiness in receiving it.
Wow.
It would have happened anyway? No, not like this. Not within days of my daughter's frantic need and then her sudden transformation to a mood of joy. I know that her imaginal act caused this wonderful change, bringing not only great joy to the receiver, but to the giver as well. P.S. I almost forgot to add that among the checks so lavishly given was one for me, too, for $3,000.
Yeah. Oh, by the way.
Well, you know what I love about this?
Wow.
What I love about this is that the mom and the daughter, they hatched a plan, and the plan was that they were going to use this method of imagining and, you know, assuming the feeling of the wish, and they decided they would imagine seeing just money rolling in.
Mm-hmm.
And that they weren't worried about where it came from, only that everyone involved was happy. It, you know, you think about sometimes, and I've heard people talk about this, about having a channel for money to come in because you don't want to work some kind of magic and then get in a wreck and get insurance money or have somebody you love die and get an inheritance. You know, it's like...
Which I've done.
There has to be some kind of channel.
Well, not
channel,
bad, no.
Right? And so I think it's interesting that they simplified that down to just everyone involved is happy. Wherever this money is coming from, anybody it comes to or comes from or whatever is happy. It's just like joy for everyone. And that's exactly what they created.
and I would go a step further and say, now this is conjecture on my part, but I'm going to conjecture that they didn't have, especially her daughter, but she also did not have the slightest doubt, the slightest concern that it could work out so that there is a feeling of joy for anyone concerned. And I can see myself, I can see others, you know, starting to waver on some of that because, well, I mean, you know, I can attract to me, but I mean, this has to also turn out to joy for everybody else. Like, oh, that's a lot. I don't know if I can do that, you know?
Yeah.
I could see that being like a resistance point. It was not a resistance point for them, apparently.
Well, I think they settled on that, you know, maybe this is conjecture on my part, but they seemed very deliberate about it, right?
They did.
And you know that there's always that a bit of scarcity consciousness that can happen where people suddenly feel like they don't want to receive something because that means less for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I have all this money when there are people that don't have enough money or whatever? It's all tangled up. And so, you know, or the idea of, well, if it comes to me, then that means someone is without. They just decided right from the beginning that wasn't going to be an issue because in their little imagination, their vignette that they made, everyone involved was happy.
Yeah, and that's a big deal, I think, because Neville did all of his teaching from the 1930s through the 1960s. And all that period, people, many, many people were just programmed with what I'll call a depression mentality because they had lived through the Great Depression, unless they were very, very young. You know, and people who lived through the Great Depression, they had that depression mentality, which included a lot of the things you just talked about. If I have some means you don't have, there's not enough to go around. I mean, that whole panoply of limiting beliefs was a major part of the consciousness of the time. So for them to basically push all that aside, say, you know what, we're just going to believe that it's going to work out for anyone concerned. That's a big deal.
Yeah,
I mean, kudos to them for being able to do it, but that's a big deal.
We're just going to believe that however this happens, it happens in a way that everyone is happy about it. That is kind of a deal, right? I mean, especially with that. I had a friend who's no longer with us. May she rest in peace. She lived to a very ripe old age in her 90s, and she grew up during the Depression, and she decided at a pretty young age she would never go through that again.
Mm.
And she and her husband were very successful. They made a lot of money. They were, you know, very comfortable. But it was so funny because she had this big pantry, and that pantry was practically a grocery store. I remember I was out of something one day, and another friend said, "Oh, just go down the street, you know, to our friend's house because she'll have it, whatever it is," because she was stocked. I mean, she was never going to go hungry again. Never going to go through that again. So it has an impact on people going through, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So let's see. What do we have next? Neville says, the boundless opportunities opened by recognizing the shift of the focus of imagining are beyond measure. There are no boundaries. The drama of life is an imaginal activity in which we bring to pass by our moods rather than by our physical acts. Moods so ably guide all towards that which they affirm, they may be said to create the circumstance of life and dictate the events. The mood of the wish fulfilled is the high tide which lifts us easily off the bar of the senses where we usually lie stranded. If we are aware of the mood and know this secret of imagining, we may announce that all of our mood affirms will come to pass.
That's another big deal. That little quote there from him. The mood of the wish fulfilled is the high tide that lifts us all easily. And before that mood so ably guide all towards that which they affirm, they may be said to create the circumstances of life and dictate the events. When you're reading that, the first thing that goes to my mind is Abraham talking about high vibration. And what I interpret that to mean is if you really want the Neville method, as I'm calling it, to work in its most affluent and abundant way, in the way that is most desirable and has the best result that you're looking for, you got to get into that high vibration place, which we know of as a place of pure joy. That's where you got to get to. And that's a pretty high bar. That's a pretty high bar.
You know, it's interesting. He says that the mood is the high tide that lifts us off the bar of the senses.
Mm.
And I think about times when you know, the senses, what we're feeling literally in our body, like when we're feeling pain. And I think about times when we may be feeling pain in our body, but something else has put us in a really great mood, or some other thing has happened that's so fantastic that we're like, oh, I don't even care. Like, I barely feel this headache because this is so fantastic, right? That's what Neville's saying. He's saying that usually we're down there on the low bar, the sand bar, if you will, of the senses. And we're only paying attention to that. But if we would pay attention to the mood can lift us off of that. And it won't matter what we're feeling in the, you know, physical sense. It won't matter. We start creating from that place. We start creating from the place of feeling instead of from the place of facts. Facts with the little air quotes around it. Mm-hmm. Facts. Right?
Right. It's true. Yeah. The concept of mood, I think you touched on it earlier, and you really did it correctly, talking about how mood is sort of a combination. How'd you say it? Of feeling and emotion, or that's not what you said. There was something like that.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's.
Is that result. What it was? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what he's driving at pretty directly is that mood is in our control. It's in our, we directly have the ability to select mood. We can actually choose our mood.
We don't think we do all the time.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think that's one of those things where we
so
have
so challenging to, about what he's saying. He's saying, hey, you can really do this.
Yeah. We can choose it instead of letting it just be the result of whatever's going on. But I don't think we always do.
Right.
So that's the part that takes practice. Practice. All right.
That's what makes the stories so inspiring, because these stories are about people who successfully put themselves into that high mood. They got themselves there, and they did it using really simple vignettes, but they did it and they sustained it, and look what came out of it.
Yeah. I love both of these. I love the story of, I feel wonderful. Something marvelous is happening to me now. I mean, they're both so simple, right? And then the other one with just, let's just imagine that money is just rolling in from everywhere and everyone involved is happy.
All right, a sea of money. I like that.
So we've got another story. The following story is by a mother who succeeded in sustaining a seemingly playful mood with startling results. Surely you've heard the old wives' tale about warts, that if a wart is bought, it will disappear. I've known this story from childhood, but not until I heard your lectures did I realize the truth hidden in the old tale. My boy, a lad of 10, had many large, ugly warts on his legs, causing an irritation which had plagued him for years. I decided that my sudden insight could be used to his advantage. A boy has a lot of faith in his mother as a rule, so I asked him if he would like to be rid of his warts. He quickly said yes, but he did not want to go to a doctor. I asked him to play a little game with me, that I would pay him a sum of money for each wart. This suited him fine, he said. He didn't see how he could lose. We arrived at a fair price, he thought, and then I said, now I'm paying you good money for those warts. They no longer belong to you. You never keep property belonging to someone else, so you can no longer keep those warts. They will disappear. It may take a day, 2 days, or a month, but remember that I've bought them and they belong to me. My son was delighted with our game, and the results sound like something read in old musty books on magic. But believe me, within 10 days, the warts began to fade, and at the end of 1 month, every wart on his body had completely disappeared.
Yeah.
There is a sequel to this story, for I've bought warts from many people. They, too, thought it great fun and accepted my 5, 7, or 10 cents a wart. In each case, the warts disappeared. But really, only one person believes me when I tell him his imagination alone took away the warts. And that one person is my young son.
Ah, good for him, though, for realizing that. That's great. Yeah.
He says, man imagining himself into a mood takes on himself the results of the mood. If he does not imagine himself into the mood, he is ever free of the result. The great Irish mystic, A.E., George William Russell, wrote in The Candle of Vision, quote, I became aware of a swift echo or response to my own moods in circumstance which had seemed hitherto immutable in its indifference. I could prophesy from the uprising of new moods in myself that I, without search, would soon meet people of a certain character, and so I met them. Even inanimate things were under the sway of these affinities. But man need not wait for the uprising of new moods in himself. He can create happy moods at will. This reminds me of something that one of my earliest mentors taught, and that was, he told the story of a man who got up in the morning and spilled his coffee and got angry. Mm-hmm. And he used to say that the coffee didn't make the man angry. The man made the coffee angry. So what he was saying was that there was anger inside the man, and that because it was there, it caused some kind of experience where it could come out. Some experience where it would be, you know, justified to feel angry. And that reminds me of what he's sure. saying here, is that he said, oh, I could prophesy about the mood or character of a person that I was going to meet next just by my own mood. Well, of course, because it's magnetic, like attracts like, right? So that makes sense to me. So I think about that when things happen that cause a reaction in me. It's like, okay, that was there, and it needed to express itself. So I attracted or created some kind of experience where that would be the normal response, or a justified response anyway. Interesting.
And I like that phrase. I like the phrase that you used. How'd you say it? Did you say that it created a reaction in you? How did you say that? There was a particular phrase that you used.
I don't know.
The way you said it just resonated. I can't remember exactly what you said. But it was along the lines of, there was this reaction, and it was a reaction I didn't like so much, but I had to take notice of it and pay attention to it. That was the gist of what I was taking away from what you were saying.
If something creates a reaction in me, I pay attention to what it is, because that thing is there. It's not, you know, it's cause and effect. And so there's always that idea of what's really going on. And especially when someone has a certain demeanor that's constant, like someone that's angry all the time. And I think we've all maybe had people in our life or known someone who has been, you know, behaved with a certain feeling or emotion constantly. Like they're mad all the time, they're angry all the time, and it's like it doesn't really matter what's going on, they're gonna find a reason to feel angry. Regardless of what's going on, they feel angry. Or maybe it's another emotion, and we can choose, you know, like Neville's talking about, we can choose the emotions, the feelings, the moods. We can choose the mood. You know, waking up in the morning and declaring that I'm going to be in a great mood today, that's a powerful thing to do. And we can do that. And I've done it before. I haven't done it lately. I think I'll start tomorrow. After falling asleep saying, I feel wonderful, something marvelous is happening now, right?
Yeah. That's right.
If you say that over and over, especially, you know, if you're one of these people where it takes you a while to fall asleep, you might be able to say that 100 times before you fall asleep.
This is true.
And you may even just wake up in a great mood automatically because I feel wonderful.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it actually helps you go to sleep when you say something like that.
I'm curious if we have any listeners with questions or comments, or we might just go to the next chapter because we've got time.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've had some, first of all, Dee Dee has joined us for the first time in a while. We haven't had her on a live stream in quite some time. So welcome, Dee Dee. And, I believe also Nasha is here too. We have a person under the name of random username who says, "Hey, does size matter?" Now, I'm not sure if that's a trolling comment.
Sounds like
or
a troll
what, but
me.
You know what? I'm going to treat it as if it were a serious question. I'm going to treat it like it's a serious question. Does the size of the thing matter? Because I don't think it does matter.
No, it's just as easy to track the
no matter what?
Castle. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that may be a trolling comment, but it's okay. You know, I think it still applies. what I was trying to drive at before with what you were talking about, and you described it so beautifully, was the idea that occasionally we do run into these moods of ours that just seem to come out of nowhere that aren't particularly what we like. And they come in a way that often catches us by surprise. Like, why am I feeling that? I was experiencing that over the last few days, actually. I found myself, you know, for extended periods of time feeling angry, and I didn't even know what I felt angry about. I mean, there was nothing in particular that I could point my finger at. And it was kind of concerning, and it was kind of frustrating because I wasn't sure what to do about, you know, why do I have a feeling that I can't even associate with something? And then I don't remember exactly how I got there, but I just started doing some basic mirror exercise, affirmation type stuff, just, you know, reinforcing myself that I care about myself, I love myself, I'm a good person, and so forth, and broke the mood. And in the process of breaking the mood, I realized that at least one message that was in this for me was, I don't have to stay in that place. Mm. I get to choose when I'm going to leave that place of feeling angry. Even if I don't know what the reason of the anger is, it doesn't matter. I get to decide how long I'm going to stay there. I get to decide when I'm going to leave. And that I find to be a very empowering thought, because once I know that I can do that, I can do it anytime. It doesn't matter what kind of mood it is. Doesn't matter what kind of emotion I'm dealing with. I can do that anytime. That's cool.
Occasionally I talk to someone who considers themselves an empath. And I say considers themselves because humans are empaths. We all are, whether we know it or not. But feel like they absorb mm-hmm. other people's moods and emotions. And I've had an experience like that on many occasions. But the way I learned to deal with it is to recognize this isn't mine. It's not mine, and I don't have to entertain it. It doesn't mean that I don't have compassion for whatever anybody else is going through, but it's not sure. mine. I don't have to carry it. And, right. you know, like you said, we get to make that choice. We don't have to just go with it because it's there. We can make the choice. I think that's an important thing to notice, especially if you're somebody who is constantly absorbing and picking up and feeling things that are coming from somewhere else, coming from someone else, because some people are very sensitive and they just say, I can't cope with being around a bunch of people. I pick up all their stuff. Well, one thing is that if you're triggered by other people's emotions, that's because you have things that aren't healed. So there's a focus there, is to focus on what needs to be dealt with in your own person, right? But then the other part of it is right. we don't have to carry any of it. We can decide. We can decide what stories are we telling that are causing this, right? Now, it's a great question. It's like, what am I making this mean about me that's causing me to feel this way? And then if it's a situation like you had where you don't even know where it's coming from, like, I can't even attach this to anything, that's when you can make that decision. It's like, well, I don't have to carry this then.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have any justification to keep it anymore.
Right. Let go of this. Let's pick something else.
I'm done. Okay. Go away. Goodbye. Yeah. And that's the skill. That's ultimately the skill that Neville's talking about. That's the reason I even brought that up is because, again, of the stories. Where in those stories, the people telling the stories were able to get themselves into those high feeling vignettes that felt really good, that were pretty short, pretty vague. They didn't have a whole lot of storyline to them.
Right.
But they just, how do you describe the fact they didn't have resistances in the way? That's what I'm trying to get at. They didn't have any of the stuff in the way. They literally let go of all that stuff and just put themselves in the mood of, hey, this is great stuff. And I think this is where I was going with it. We talked about people who grew up in the Depression. One of the things that happens to you when you grow up in a severely deprived situation is you really appreciate not being deprived. You really appreciate if you can get your mind over there, it doesn't take a whole lot of effort to start saying, wow, it must be really great to be rich. It must be really great to have the food. It must be really great to have the house. It must be really great to have the whole panoply of things that somebody in that state of mind goes through. And I'm wondering, maybe that actually contributed to the storytellers, to their ability to get into that high flying place.
I love that the result that we both said is like, wow, I mean, this might be the best story ever. Right. This is like a ridiculous result.
It is.
that the most ridiculous result came from the most vague, right? It was really vague. Like she actually said, like, I'm so exhausted. I can't think of, the list is too big. I can't think of all the stuff I need. I'm just going to decide that I just feel wonderful. That's it. I feel wonderful.
That's it.
And it wasn't even, I feel wonderful. All my needs are met, or I feel wonderful. A fortune is coming to me, or it was something marvelous is happening. It was still completely vague. Like if I called you on the phone and said, well, I feel wonderful. Something marvelous has just happened. You would probably immediately say, what? What happened?
What is it? Yeah, right.
Tell me. But she just didn't bother herself with that at all. She didn't.
Not at all.
That's why I'm like, okay, this is my new falling asleep mantra for sure. Sometimes when I'm deciding
she lived for the mood.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes when I'm deciding on what am I going to create, it must be this Virgo rising because I'm very specific and persnicky and I have to get details. And I'm like, gosh, it's so much easier to not worry about any of that and just say, I feel wonderful. Something marvelous is happening now.
It does have that virtue.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does put you, it takes everything else out of the way. There is nothing else in the way when all that is left is just that mood feeling and there's nothing else. It's very clean. It's a clean approach. It doesn't get muddy. It doesn't get caught up in stuff.
There's
no substance of life going on there. It's just, there it is.
If you knew that the outcome was that you were going to feel wonderful, like these are the two components we know of the outcome. Something marvelous is going to happen and you're going to feel wonderful. If you know that, then what do the details matter? We get so caught up with details, but I don't think they really matter. So I love it. That might be my favorite Neville story yet.
and I said before we got started that I love the title of it. I love it now even more because that other side of it, the flip side of trying to come up with all the details, dealing with the lists of all the things that I'm trying to track, that's exactly where I've been for the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
And what his story has reminded me of is you're making it far too difficult. you don't have to make it that difficult.
We are so good at making it difficult.
We really are. All we have to do is simplify it, just down to that. Very steady feeling, that just very simple, joyous feeling, just to make it there. And that's what that phrase, something marvelous is happening right now, does. Like, I don't even have to know what it is. I just know it's marvelous.
Okay, so I just want everyone that listens to the podcast to go to sleep tonight and until we meet again with that mantra and then report back next week on Neville Day.
Let's do that. I like that.
Okay.
So I'm going to pull out the book. I'm going to make sure that I have that page bookmarked. I may actually highlight. I never highlight a book. I may actually highlight this. Isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening to me now. What a great phrase. Isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening to me now. Yeah, I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
Now, here's the interesting question. How many stories are we going to have next week, I wonder?
It will be so wonderful to have some stories. I'm gonna do it and see what happens.
We have experiments. We have live streamers who are listening, and hopefully they'll do it too. But we also have a lot more people who are podcast listeners. We'd love it if you guys would do this too. Just do this little experiment for a week. Just every single night, just repeat that to yourself and get in that really high-flying feeling of something marvelous is happening right now. And then do it for a few days and just send us some emails and tell us what you've been experiencing. Let's make it a thing for next week.
Fun. Yeah, but I'm looking for the exact, I'm looking for the exact quote. So, isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening to me now. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's it. So isn't it wonderful? Something marvelous is happening to me now. And ultimately, it's true. I mean, if you're alive, something marvelous is happening now. What this is really doing is focusing on, yes, I recognize it's actually true. Something marvelous is happening now. Well, cool. I'm finally noticing. What took me so long?
That's true. And you're right. It is. If you're in a warm bed going to sleep and you're alive and you're breathing, then something marvelous is happening right now. You're alive.
It really is.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So
probably a whole bunch of marvelous things are happening.
I'm expecting some good emails and posts and waves.
Next week's show should be a lot of fun then.
Yeah.
I'm looking to see if there are any other questions. No other questions. I don't want to spend 5 minutes going into the next chapter. But let's see, what else can we talk about in the last 5 minutes? Well, I will mention this. I have been spending less time on Facebook and seeing more. Isn't that an interesting thing? But it's true. I think I spend maybe 5 minutes a day now on Facebook, and I'm seeing more things happening. One of the things I'm seeing is, you know, how there are groups, there are Neville groups and there are Abraham groups and there are general law of attraction groups and so forth.
Right.
I'm seeing more Neville stories being told in non-Neville groups than I had in the past.
Like Neville people stories from people who are using Neville things or Neville stories from Neville books?
No, okay. People who are using the Neville approach, okay, and describing that as their method, but doing it in a non-Neville group. And I thought that was really interesting. I don't know what's driving that, but
us.
You know, no, yeah, we're driving it. It's us. We did it. I can't rule that out either because I do know we've been picking up more and more Neville listeners. But I just think it's fascinating. And I think it's a good thing. Neville deserves his due. I mean, he's a major contributor to the whole law of attraction movement, I guess you might call it, or the law of attraction, deliberate creator, conscious creator thing. And he deserves to get his recognition for that.
I agree. I love Neville's methods. Yeah. They are magical and they work. They work if we work them, right?
Yes. Yes. Well, we have to do the work. I know something else that I haven't done with you in a while that I really need to do now, and that is to remind people how to reach out to Cindy Chavez.
Oh, they can reach out to me through my website, cindychavez.com, CINDIECHAVEZ. And there's a contact form there. I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you. I love to help people.
I'm curious. I know, for instance, whenever I have Joel do that, he talks about, you know, how he always gets back to people. It sometimes takes him a little while, but he always gets back. He gets people who are contacting him. Do you get a fair number of contacts from people who are listening to the podcast?
I haven't gotten one in a little while, but I do get them. Yeah. And I reply to them, and you know, sometimes people just give me a shout out to say hello. Sometimes people are looking for a coach. Sometimes people want a specific help with a specific thing, and I do try to get back to everybody that reaches me. I don't always get back to them the very same day, but I have a couple day turnaround.
Mm-hmm. That's quite reasonable. I mean, you can't. Well, I don't know. Some people might expect to have a quick turnaround, but I think a couple day turnaround is quite reasonable. So that's okay. So looks like the energy gods are telling us that it's time to draw to a close because Cindy's signal keeps freezing up on me. So hopefully that's going to clear itself by next week. But hey, that's okay. The message that we got out of today's show was really, really good. So thank you for sharing your insights as usual. We really appreciate that.
Oh, I love being here. I'll be here next week.
The energy gods are definitely interfering, so we'll have to kind of draw it to a close there. But thank you very much. Thank you to our live streamers for their contributions, and especially thank you to our podcast listeners as well. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.